This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Usual Paradox podcast, the Doxcast. I am one of your usual hosts, Richard Early, and since we're going to talk about magic for this whole thing, we let Josh have the day off, so... I mean, Josh is pretty magical himself.
He is very magical, yeah. But he doesn't have the magic in him.
Yeah. Heart of the Cards? Wait, no, that's not right. So, I am joined by Kyle Rehom.
Hello, everyone.
Kyle's almost always here for Magic Podcasts.
You know it.
Except for when I interviewed Corey Baumeister.
I don't know what happened to my invite. Must have got lost in the mail on that one.
And making his second ever Doxcast appearance is Hawk Cook. How are you, Hawk?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Are you nervous?
Just a little bit.
Excellent. That's just where we want you. So we are here. The full spoiler for M19 is out, the new core set. And we'll talk to you about what a core set is in just a second. So a couple bookkeeping things. So this will be available on iTunes. We're streaming live on Twitch right now, and we'll get it up as soon as we can. But as we record this, the pre-release for Core Set M19 is coming up on July 7th and 8th. At Paradox, we have pre-registration available for all events. If you pre-register early, you get your events for a $5 discount. And, it looks like a pretty sweet set so far. And we are still pre-ordering the early release booster boxes that come with the Nexus of Fate cards. I would guess at this point they will also just be available for sale over the weekend unless things really change a lot. So we will be, they're $99.99, and the first 60 boxes can be picked up early and all come with Nexus of Fate. So that is your bookkeeping side of things. So let's introduce Core Set M19. Kyle, what? I'm a brand new Magic player. What the hell's a Core Set?
So core sets were a part of Magic for a very long time as an annual or biannual release that was just really meant to be a baseline for Magic. So if you were trying to get started with Magic, you wanted to start with a core set because the cards are going to be on a little bit simpler level. You don't see quite as many like overarching themes that you have to worry about within the set. It's just general good cards. For a while, they were all reprinted cards, but the philosophy on that changed to where now we're only seeing about 50% reprints or so. So they introduce a lot of new fun cards as well. And so core sets, we haven't seen them for about the past 3 or 4 years, I think. But they're coming back now just to give us that kind of baseline jumping point each year. They're going to pioneer or they're going to lead off the Planeswalker decks themed around the core set Planeswalkers and just kind of streamline things and get them in a nice cycle to where each year we can look forward to that core set to kind of reset and get a good starting point.
Yeah, I mean, and technically, like, the original printing of Magic the Gathering is referred to as Alpha.
Yep.
I mean, Alpha was a core set.
Yeah, I mean, that's Alpha, Beta, are the original core sets. So really, it's just back to the roots.
Yep. And then for years, I mean, they've played around with it in so many different variations and ways and introduced new cards with M10 and led all the way up through Magic Origins. I mean, to the day, Magic Origins is card for card one of the best sets ever printed.
Yeah, it's a lot of really unique things. The flip planeswalkers were introduced there. They explored out into different planes within the core set, so we got sneak peeks into Kaladesh there. There was a lot of different things going on with Magic Origins, and it was a lot of fun to learn about the planeswalkers at the time.
Yep. Now, we don't – one of the things about it, and you kind of said this, but a lot of modern players are very much used to there's a storyline with every set that comes out.
Yep.
And so we don't have that here, but we did get a lot of basically focus on Nicole Bolas's history, basically, for this thing.
Yeah, I think Hawk, you're a fan of the NBD, right?
Yeah.
What are we learning about Nicol Bolas this time around?
Mostly just like his relationship with the other original Elder Dragons,
mm-hmm.
and then what he was doing on Tarkir when he fought like Ugin, and when he was releasing the Eldrazi.
And what are his relationships with those other Elder Dragons?
Yeah, what's his relationship status right now?
It's complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of cards that feature Nicol Bolas. We see, you know, his ascension to power. We get glimpses of how he gained his Planeswalker spark. You know, how he's manipulated Tezzeret and Sarkhan and all these other Planeswalkers to do his bidding. And, you know, the story's kind of been low-key centered around Nicol Bolas for the past few years. And this is really just driving that home that, like, yeah, this guy has been behind all the bad things that have happened, you know, over the past 2 to 3 years of sets. And it's really, you know, leading towards that culmination that we're expecting in the Ravnica block when that comes out later this year.
Yeah, and I think it's a clever way to substitute for the flavor of a new world or a world we're returning to by focusing on something like that. I imagine that might be something that they do trying, you know, they still want to try to bring that flavor to that core set. So anyway, it's a great place to start if you're a new player. Every Magic card can be used with every other Magic card except for, of course, you know, unhinged type cards, but this is sort of your backbone of all that.
Yep.
So the first thing we do after we talk about the lore of the set or the history that's involved in it is we talk about Planeswalkers, because who doesn't love a good Planeswalker?
They're pretty popular, that's for sure.
And technically there's like 11 of them in this set if you count the the ones in the theme
decks. Since we have five Planeswalker decks, we've got five there, five printed in the set, and one special little guy that we've kind of been talking about here.
Yep. Well, we're going to kick it off with Nicol Bolas, the Ravager. So who wants to break that? Hawk, can you read us Nicol Bolas, and we'll go from there?
Okay. So on the front side, Nicol Bolas is a
front side?
Yeah, because he's a flip Planeswalker. Yeah. He costs 4 mana, one anything, one blue, one black, and one red. He has 4/4 with flying, and then when he enters the battlefield, each opponent discards a card. Then you can pay 7 mana, and then you exile him, return him to the battlefield transformed under his owner's control. You can only activate this as a sorcery.
Let's talk about that side for a second. I mean, it's a pretty compact, good card already, right? It is three different colors, but yeah, I mean, a 4/4 flyer, 4/4, right?
Yep.
That makes everyone discard a card besides yourself.
Yep, so I mean, to begin with, this is a good body and just a solid dude, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this could be a card that they would print in a set normally, and it probably wouldn't be a mythic, but it could be a rare, and, you know.
It might get, like, one other ability.
Exactly.
Since it doesn't have the, you know, wouldn't have the transform ability or whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
So, all right, the Planeswalker side.
Okay, so on his backside, he's a legendary Planeswalker with +2, draw 2 cards, -3. He deals 10 damage to target creature or planeswalker. -4, put target creature or planeswalker from a graveyard under your control. And then his ultimate is -12, exile all but the bottom card of target player's library, and he starts with 7 loyalty.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say about this guy. Like, what does he not do?
Yeah,
basically?
four ability Planeswalker, already pretty great. +2, draw 2 cards. Like, yeah I guess that's okay. he's got it all. He does everything. So if you can jump through the hoops of letting your creature live long enough for you to pay 7 mana, this is a payoff and a half.
Yeah, I mean, Hawk, like, red, blue, black, so we're not exactly like in a ramp color, you know, in and of itself or whatever, so it might be a little hard to get to that 11 total mana or whatever, but what do you think of Nicol Bolas here?
I think he's pretty strong. I do like the flavor behind his -4, where he just puts a creature or planeswalker under your control.
Yep.
Yeah, he's got a lot of references back to his previous iterations and things that he's done in the past. Just kind of hits home on all the different blue, black, and red things that those types of mages like to do.
And even his -12, I mean, we've seen a lot of Planeswalkers lately where their ultimate ability is, like, not really ultimate. Like, it might be cool, you know, but it's not. But, I mean, this is basically a win-the-game ultimate.
Yeah, it might as well say destroy target player.
Yeah, so, I mean, depending on rare situations, it may not be, but, I mean, mostly. And you're probably not going to, I don't know how often you're going to use that, like, I'm drawing cards.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and then, like, if you get that 7 mana, like, you should realistically, barring he doesn't ever take any damage, right?
Yeah.
You should realistically be able to draw 2 cards and kill 3 things.
Yeah, like that seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah, so, wow, he's awfully good. So, I don't know. Like, and the last thing is, like, it's a very signature card. All mm-hmm. those abilities, even if he doesn't get played a lot, I mean, obviously he is going to get played.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's just one of those cards that is obviously good.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. I think, I mean, like I said, the biggest thing is you got to kind of jump through the hoops of living that long and getting to that seven mana to be able to activate it and not die right away. So
he's probably not going to be like a standard staple, you know. That'll probably be a little rough.
He's got some stiff competition. Four mana is a super competitive spot right now, at least in standard. But once, you know, we've got rotation coming up in just 3 months, so we'll see if he can reign supreme after that.
Yeah, well, right, and Guild Pack will give us probably more ways to make the mana curve.
Yep. Or, you know, got some more color fixing in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Next up on our list is Ajani, Adversary of Tyrants.
Guess who's back? Back again. Ajani's back. Tell your friends. Yeah, our white planeswalker this time around is Ajani. He is Adversary of Tyrants. He costs 2 white. He comes in at 4 loyalty. He's +1. You put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures. -2, return target creature card with converted mana cost 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. And then at -7, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of your end step, create 3/1/1 cat creature tokens with lifelink.
Which is hard to keep up with.
Yeah, that's 3 dudes is pretty significant.
Hawk, what do you think?
Well, I think he kind of needs a little bit of support to make him good, since he already has to put counters on creatures that are there. And then his ultimate takes a while to build up. The cats.
Yeah, he's definitely a planeswalker that needs a good supporting cast. He's not someone that you can just like slam down and expect to take over the game with it. I like that his abilities all do different things, and they're you know, subtly synergistic. Being able to get back a creature that can protect him and then pump that creature up the next turn, or, you know, let you deploy a creature and pump both of them. I can't imagine he's going to be amazing, but I would not be surprised if he doesn't find his way somewhere into a deck, just because it's a solid planeswalker that's going to, you know, help you push just that little bit of extra that you need.
When he's castable at 4 yep. mana. Like, that's a big thing. He absolutely is going to have a home in some sort of, you know, weenie deck or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he fits into the curve very nicely to
yes.
what he does. If you have 2-3 creatures on the board and this is your turn 4 play and then you're pumping your team and, you know, yada yada, right?
Yep, so exactly.
He's solid. The only thing, I mean, there are a lot of white planeswalkers. And there are yes. a lot of planeswalkers in every color, but there's like a lot of white ones, it feels like.
Yes, it does feel like they got kind of the those in green got kind of the spotlight to start off with.
Yeah, somebody could count at home and find out that there aren't any more white ones than any other. It just feels like that to me. So like, that's the only thing is, like, I'm sure it's tough to keep designing a white planeswalker that has sort of a new role or
yep.
Anything like that, you know. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Hawk, any other thought about him?
Not too much.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And we have more buddies. Like, pretty much, these are just, well, obviously, there isn't a new one, right? No, they're all just returning.
There is actually one new one. There's the green one.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Tezzeret Artifice Master is next. Hawk.
All right, he's 3/2 blue. And then his +1 is create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature with flying. His 0 is draw a card. And if you control 3 or more artifacts, you get to draw 2 cards, and then his ultimate is -9. You get an emblem with, at the beginning of your end step, search your library for a permanent card, put it onto the battlefield, and then shuffle your library, and he starts with 5 loyalty.
Kyle, thoughts?
Man, I don't know. I like him a lot. He does good things. He makes flying threats, and he draws cards, but at 5 mana, that might just be too much. Like, I'm not as excited about him as I would have been Ajani, but I think he's got some potential still.
Yeah, he's just kind of there or something.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong with him.
Yeah.
Right? Am I missing something? Is there something like glaringly Hawk? Is there something glaringly wrong with Tezzeret?
No. I mean, he's just solid. I think he's pretty good.
What are you doing with him? You know, where's he going?
Yeah, it's really hard to say. Like, artifacts have kind of been a sub-theme. You know, we had Kaladesh and Aether Revolt. We see a little bit of artifact sub-theme in Magic 2019. So there's some potential there. But again, we just really need more artifice for Tezzeret to master. And right now it's not, I don't see it. I miss the turn something into a 5/5. Yeah, that just felt good.
Okay, so next up is a planeswalker who definitely needs help. You know, like, there haven't been a lot of good Lilianas, so, like, I think we definitely need a good Liliana, and Liliana untouched by death.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'm being sarcastic.
I wanted to make sure. so Liliana untouched by death is pretty interesting. Two black for a 4 loyalty planeswalker, plus 1, put the top 3 cards of your library into your graveyard. If at least one of them is a zombie, each opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. Minus 2 allows you to give target creature -X/-X until end of turn, where X is the number of zombies you control. And then her -3, so I guess technically an ultimate, you may cast zombie cards from your graveyard this turn. Full stop.
Yep.
So that last ability is probably the one that intrigues me the most, because it just screams to be broken. Maybe not in standard, but in modern, where you have some very recurrable zombies such as Gravecrawler, you know, play that with some sort of sacrifice outlet. And the fact that the zombies, they don't exile, so if you can cast it multiple times from your graveyard or, you know, whatever you need to do, there's some potential there for that to get out of control pretty quickly. And I honestly just like this card in general. Like, I think it's synergistic in that you fill up your graveyard using the +1 ability. You -3 for some value to cast 2 or 3 zombies out of your graveyard. And then you still have a planeswalker around that can continue to give you value and act as some pseudo-removal. So I'm a fan, but it needs some work.
Pretty clean pretty clean dredge outlet then, basically.
Right,
right.
Yep.
Hawk, what do you think?
The -3 is definitely an interesting, since you can just use that right away. I'm not too sold on the other abilities, though.
There's no mana bonus or anything, so you still got to be making land drops and everything.
Exactly. Mana, so. It's deceiving, because you're like, ooh, a -3 that I can use right away when I play her. Well, that's really bad, because you just spent 4 mana, you know, to cast a pseudo Yawgmoth's bargain, but then, or Yawgmoth's will. But for only for zombies, so
yeah. And I mean, one thing that jumps out to me, I think I kind of like the card. I think
I do too. Like,
I think you're absolutely right. Like, somebody will take it who loves to build zombie decks.
You're right.
You know, but that's the only thing that jumps out to me a little bit, is that it's so. Well, Tezzeret works with artifacts, so maybe this opinion is weird, right? But like, it's so narrow in that it, like, literally the only player who wants this is someone who plays with zombies.
Right. We kind of saw that in the past with the Liliana that really cared about swamps. You know,
it
very similar, and like, you know, you really got to be wanting to play swamps to play this Liliana.
Kind of, but at least I know I'm playing swamps.
Right.
If I'm playing Liliana, I'm not necessarily
That's
playing
true.
Zombies. If
that
I'm
is
playing
true.
Liliana. I the card's solid and really does a great job at exactly what it needs to do, right? But it only does one thing, which is be the backbone of some kind of interesting zombie deck. So.
Yeah, I agree.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't want to diss it. It's just, it's kind of a weird card to me, because if I open a pack, you know, and I'm like, why don't I play zombies? Like, just, I know interaction at the counter, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, so that's what feels sort of weird about it to me.
But, I mean, yeah, at the same token, there's the guy who plays zombies all the time, and he's like, give me 4 of these Lilianas and a 5th one to have as a trophy on the side, you know?
Well, and it's important to filter pieces for Magic decks over time. You know, it's important that a set has got a card for a zombie player, has got a card for an angel player, and it might take sometimes years for all those pieces to totally get out there, but it is a really important thing when you're releasing sets to reach your fan base of every type. So, okay, so I'm an old Sarkhan Vol fan. I don't know. I loved Sarkhan Vol. I didn't think I was great, but...
He was pretty solid.
Sarkhan Fireblood is our next Planeswalker.
All right, so he's 1/2 red, and he's got his +1 is you may discard a card, and if you do, draw a card. And he's got another +1, add 2 mana in any combination of colors. You can only use it to cast dragon spells. His -7 is create 4/5/5 red dragon creature tokens with flying, and he starts with 3 loyalty.
I don't know. I'm in.
Yeah.
I think I'm in.
It's very similar. It has a very similar feeling to Liliana. It's like, man, if the pieces are there, like this guy ramping two mana for dragons and then still having like a planeswalker around as well. It's pretty tempting.
Like, yeah, no, like again, it's just what I was just saying above. Like you have to want to play dragons. I get that. So, yep. But yeah, I mean, just like with her, like I don't know. He's Hawk. What do you think?
Well, I like that he is pretty low to cast, so he can help get you to your dragons faster, because that's always been an issue with dragon decks.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. Giving a dragon deck a tools early on to either like help you sift through, and this is not bad late in the game either. Like you draw it, and you are hopefully holding a land or something back, and you can filter that away and keep going.
That's the interesting thing about him is, like, that first ability, I mean, first ability alone wouldn't be a good enough to just play him in, like, a red, you know, like a mono-red aggro deck.
Right.
But it's close, you know, like, to have that backup card that does something for you after you've dumped your hand on the table and for only three mana. But, yeah, it's not enough. You'd need a second ability, really,
to make
that totally work. So, I don't know. This is extremely interesting. I mean, this is a lot of cards that really just fit a specific role.
Yeah. Well, and I think 2 years ago, if we saw a 3-mana Planeswalker, we would have been very much freaking out.
Agreed.
But then we had Jace, shirtless Jace, Pirate Jace, whatever you want to call
cunning
him.
Cunning Castaway.
Cunning Castaway, and he didn't do anything. I think we're not as gun-shy on 3-mana Planeswalkers anymore, but they definitely always need some sort of consideration.
Yep. But I mean, this card is so much better than our old friend the two red.
Oh, Tybalt.
Tybalt, you know.
Yeah.
Give me a card, even a narrow card, even a card like this that's, you know, again only for the dragon player. Like,
yeah.
I'd rather have this Planeswalker any day than Tybalt.
I think that's reasonable. Yeah.
So it's they're going to be playing around. I mean, I guess I always thought when I was younger, I kind of figured there might come a day where, you know, they had played around enough where they knew what they wanted to do, but the game just grows and evolves so much that we're just never going to stop playing around with how it works. So, and again, it's a card that fits a role. So, all right. And then I lied to you, and Kyle corrected me. There is an original Planeswalker. Vivian, I guess? Vivian?
Yeah.
Vivian Reed.
Yeah.
Which sounds like an actress from the 1930s.
Yeah, so. It's a very, like, it doesn't seem like a fantasy name, but there it is. Vivian Reed is 3GG for a 5 loyalty Planeswalker. Plus one, you get to look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature or land card from among them and put it into your hand. The rest go on the bottom in a random order. -3, destroy target artifact, enchantment, or creature with flying. And -8, you get an emblem with creatures you control get +2/+2, and have vigilance, trample, and indestructible. This is a very solid middle of the line green Planeswalker. Like if I was designing a green Planeswalker when I was trying to, you know, start my own game or something, this is probably what it would look like. You know, it gets rid of those things green doesn't like: artifacts, enchantments, and creatures with flying. It gives you some value to go find more creatures and lands. And when it goes ultimate, it makes all your creatures really strong and unkillable. So, I like it a lot. It's hard to say if it's going to fit in or not. Like, when you get to 5 mana, you really need those Planeswalkers that are, like, going to push you over the top. But in a creature-heavy deck, this could just be what you need.
Yeah, Alex really, I think, would like this card. So, Hawk, what do you think?
Well, I like the 5. And then killing the artifacts and enchantments is pretty similar to what Freya Elise from that one commander deck does. So I think she's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know if there's a lot. This is the problem with a lot of green cards. I don't know how much there's to say about her.
Well, it's than, like, you know, like they introduce a new character, but then don't really give her like a style or a personality. Like she's just very, yep, this is a green Planeswalker. Here you go. Like this could have very easily been a Nissa or a Garrick or, you know, whatever other green Planeswalkers we've had in
the
past.
That's true. And what makes this a unique one? What in the future, if I see the name Vivian Reed, you know, Land Stomper, you know, or whatever,
yep.
Like what am I hearkening back to? That
I mean, yeah, she has a bow and it looks very magical, so you know that I guess that's something, but
It's a thing you could have.
Yep, exactly. I don't know. Not that it's a bad card or anything. It just doesn't excite me at all.
So the highlight is probably Nicole Bolas. And then there are a couple others here that that could – I mean, both Liliana, Sarkhan, and even a Johnny could probably be something. Right?
Yep. So. No, I agree. I think all the – there's no, like, super standout ones, but they all have a lot of potential and can definitely find homes where they need to.
How about you, Hawk? What do you think? Like, Nicole Bolas aside, what's your dark horse here? Who's going to be the standout?
I think Tezzeret might be, just because of that – ultimate, if you can protect them, because we did just get Omniscience back in this set as well.
Interesting. Yeah,
I like it, and I like the outside of the box. So, all right. So when I was a little kid,
tell us a story.
I wasn't even a little kid. You know, when I like the cool thing about Magic turning 25 this year is so is Paradox. Like, we came out the same year. Like, I opened in June, and then Magic debuted at that year's Gen Con, which was in August, I think. So yep. we didn't carry Alpha or Beta. We were like, that's a game. That looks dumb. but, you know, like, by the time I was catching up with the game, I did have some packs of Legends. I probably had, I don't know, three boxes go through the store or something like that. We didn't have a game distributor back then. So, you know, you ordered them through your comic distributor, and that's how you get a couple boxes. So, but I mean, right away, like, this concept of Elder Dragon Legends was just huge. I mean, it was just, and that's what we're going to talk about next is the Elder Dragon Legends in this set. But I mean, these are really cool. You know, this is what makes, I think this is the thing that makes this set something more than just another core set.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, the last thing I'm going to say about them is that, I mean, the original ones, they're really sweet, but good God, there are so many of them that literally just do nothing. You know,
like, it's like, oh, this is a 7/7 creature that has like old random keywords that we don't use anymore.
Yep.
You know,
so, there's some that are just literally, it's a creature.
Yeah, exactly.
And that doesn't. And the thing is, like when you have this concept of the Elder Dragon Legend, it should be an epic thing. It should mm-hmm. be like a really, you know, crazy thing. And I mean, these kind of capture what you would think of that. So,
oh, absolutely.
It's, like, we'll cover them all here fairly quickly.
So. Yeah, it's great to see the steps that they've taken in the game to where they can realize that this concept has a lot of weight behind it, and we just need to redesign it and put it out there again, and people are going to love it. And I think they hit them out of the park with...
Oh, I do, too. I think they're really good. And then, I mean, obviously, like, you're thinking, like, well, they could have done these at any time, and they you know, didn't have to be in this set. It's the 25th anniversary. I mean, I think this is the right set for them.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Arcades.
Hawk?
Okay.
Tell us about this one.
So Arcades is a 4-mana creature. He's 1/1 green, 1 white, and 1 blue. So he's banned. He's a 3/5 with flying vigilance. And whenever a creature with defender enters the battlefield under your control, you get to draw a card. And every creature you control with defender signs combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power and can attack as though it didn't have defender.
I think this guy's good.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. The walls are alive. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
I think every time that they've come up with an effect like this, I mean, Doran, Assault Formation, just in, you know, recent-ish years, like, it's been popular and people have wanted to build around it. And it's something there. You're going to take one of the fundamental rules of Magic where, you know, you have defenders that can't attack, and you're going to turn it around. So, of course, there's, like, a space for you to be able to break this and abuse it, and that's what really excites me and I'm sure everyone else about Arcades.
I mean, my brother years ago had the deck he called Wallos.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's coming back. I feel it. So, Hawk, any thoughts?
I really, really like him with, like, Colossus of Akros, since it's already indestructible and now can attack as a 10/10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, this is just a good card.
Hawk was telling me he's got a whole stack of cards over here that he bought for his upcoming Arcades commander deck. So it's watch out for that one. I'm sure there'll be a few of them floating around.
Chromium.
Ooh, Chromium's probably my favorite. So Chromium the Mutable is 4WB/BL. So this is our Esper Elder Dragon. It's a 7/7. It has flash. It can't be countered, and it has flying. And it has the ability to discard a card, and then until end of turn, Chromium becomes a human with base power and toughness 1-1, loses all abilities, and gains hexproof, and it can't be blocked this turn. So this is your control deck finisher extraordinaire. Like, you sneak in a 7-7 flyer at end of turn, they can't do anything about it. If they try to answer it with removal, you just shrink it down into a human for the cost of one card out of your hand. Yeah, this is an awesome card. I'm really excited to play about it. And I really like the flavor behind it, too. Like, it's a dragon that just all of a sudden turns into a human. It's like, oh, good day, sir. And then, you know, you walk away, and all of a sudden it's a dragon and it flies away again.
Like, it almost feels like it should be a vampire, you know. But
it'd be kind of cool.
It is pretty similar to that Shadows card that turns into Insidious Mist.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, this is a finisher. This is a... yeah, like you said, you know, it's the fact that the flash, I mean, just really makes this card.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't know, like, this card's great. I would play this card 100%.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I remember the days, too, this is exactly the type of card I used to play, like, the worst angels. They would cost 8, and because I thought they were cool.
Yep, you know? Exactly. But, now you can play cool dragons that are actually good.
Yeah, so. Ooh, Dragonstorm. Anyway, Palladium Moors, Hawk.
All right, Palladia Moors, the Ruiner, is a 3, a red, a green, and a white, so she's 6. Naya, she's a 6-6 with flying, vigilance, and trample. And then she has hexproof if she hasn't dealt damage yet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really the first time they've ever done something like this, and I know it's something that took a while for people to kind of grasp. Basically... the creature has hexproof until it deals damage. So once it blocks and deals damage to a creature, it attacks and deals damage to a player. Anything in there, then they can finally open up and target it with spells and abilities. But exactly what you want in Naya, like a big creature, 3 great keywords. This is a heck of a beater. Like, if you can get this out, you know, you faster than turn 6, your opponent's going to be really worried.
No, it's good, and it's, I mean, it's going to be played, I mean, there's going to be ramp. In the
yep, exactly.
In, so it's going to come out early. No, I think it's very good. I think the drawback is just fine, you know. It's basically just going to have to be dealt with at instant speed, and that's it, is pretty much the point.
So, yep.
Vivictus Asmodi.
You want to talk about this one, Hawk? I know this was the other one you were looking to build a commander deck about.
Okay, so... Vivictus Asmodi the Dire is a 3, one, black, red, and green for 6. He's Jund. He's a 6-6 with flying. And whenever he attacks, for each player, including yourself, you choose target permanent that player controls. Those players sacrifice those permanents. And then each player who sacrificed a permanent this way reveals the top card of their library, then puts it onto the battlefield if it's a permanent.
Yeah, so we've seen this effect, you know, in Chaos Warp and a couple of other things. Now you get to do it for every player in the game. Still pretty good in a two-player game because you're probably getting rid of their biggest threat and giving them something that's equal to or less than their biggest threat. And you can potentially upgrade yours. You do have to do one of your own as well. So, you know, there could be
Christian
some...
Duvall would love this. It's another, you know, like,
yeah, exactly.
It's going to happen. Spin the wheel cards.
So, yeah.
Hawk, are you really planning a commander deck around Vivictus?
Yeah. Sensei's top. Just plan to stack your own deck.
Sure.
I suppose, yeah. There's no
gonna be a wild card. Who knows?
There's no shuffle involved. You just reveal the next card. That's interesting. I didn't think about that.
And anything else. Yeah, any way you can manipulate that top card.
Yeah, you know, give you the advantage and take it away from your opponents.
Sure.
It's really good against those control guys because they'll have a lot of instants and sorceries that they don't get back.
Yep, exactly. And this gets around hexproof and indestructible because it does target, so not hexproof, but it does get around indestructible. So, yeah, that's an exciting card. Will be a popular... commander card. Jund is the commander, like the dragon commander colors for the most part. So this is going to see a lot of play there.
No, absolutely. Like, the more I think about it, the more I like it, actually. So mm-hmm. And I think, like, I don't play much commander, but this seems like exactly the type of card that's fun to play with in commander.
Yeah, like, no one can be too upset about it. No, like, it is a dragon that has to attack, so, like, you're not getting blown out of the water or surprised or anything, so...
Hawk, Kyle already claimed Chromium, so what's your favorite out of here, Vivictus?
I would have to say I lean slightly more towards Vivictus than Arcades, but it's really close. I really like both of them.
Well, good with that. I'll take Arcades. I think Arcades is... Yeah, I mean, these are pretty signature cards. I mean, I remember, when Invasion came out way back when, and we got a cycle of dragons,
yep.
You know? So this reminds me a lot of those, but these are... these are just a little more signature because they have that name on them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and we do have Elder as a creature type now.
Yep.
So it's pretty interesting.
And there's more Elder Dragon Legends out there in the world. These aren't the only ones.
Yeah, exactly.
So, there's that weird cat one.
Oh, yeah, the Commander one.
There's from Legends, there's one that's 3/5 just cat person.
Huh.
It's an Elder. It's I can't remember the name, but it's a really weird. Seriously, it doesn't even fly. I might be wrong about its power.
Maybe it's best that we just forget about it.
Yeah,
there's that other cat dragon they did in that Commander product.
Yeah.
No, this one is just, that's it. It's just it's just a decent body-ish for an expensive cost, but it's an Elder Dragon Legend. You're okay? So, and again, this from back in the days. I mean, the interesting thing about this set is there's no new mechanics this time. So we spent a lot of time on just, all the Planeswalkers and all the other Dragon Legends. I don't think there is a single new mechanic, right? No.
No, nothing new. Yeah. We've definitely got a few returning ones and some twists on previous mechanics, but nothing straight new.
One of the things about the original Legends I was going to say is what they've figured out now is when you have something, we just said this with Dominaria, when you have Legends put them at every level of rarity so that they're accessible to people. This set's not like that. This set's very much there's a lot of really cool classic cards in here and they're all rare or mythic, But I think for this set that works really well. I mean, this set in a lot of ways isn't unlike a Masters set. I mean,
it is very close to a Masters set.
Yeah, and we'll talk about some of those in a second. But I was thinking about that before the podcast. Is it's a Masters set for $3.99 instead of $9.99.
Yeah, so it's got some good high value cards in there.
Yep.
If they just give us a foil in every pack, I think we'd be in business.
So if you're new to the game. Again, this is a perfect place to start, and then the step towards getting in, I mean, we have the open house now, and we just had our open house on Saturday this past weekend. Hawk, how did that go? You ran that.
Yeah, it went really well. We had at least 20 players come in for that.
So did they have fun?
They looked like they were having a lot of fun with it.
Did they stick around and play, or did they just take their deck and leave? What was the...
we had a few that left, but the majority of them stuck around and played some games.
Sure. Did you have anybody that was brand new that needed to learn how to play, or did you...
We had a couple new people, but we had plenty of veteran players to help show them how to play the game.
Yeah, awesome. So far, that's been... I mean, that was one of the fears about Open House, is if we actually had, 20 brand new people show up, how would we teach them? But so far, Kyle, it's worked out pretty well. It's been a good mix.
Yeah, it has been great. It's really good to see how open and willing the experienced players are to just sit down with a deck that... they played with 10 years ago when they started playing, and just teach somebody the game at the basic level, get them excited. It is that first step to getting into the game. And then obviously next jump is into the pre-release coming up this weekend.
Yep. And, a pre-release is basically a showcase of the new cards. You get to play with you buy into the event. Everybody gets at least an extra pack for playing, and it's sort of like I always say, it's like playing golf. Like, it's a 4-round event, sort of measuring your own score. Like, yeah, you're playing an opponent, but I mean, the more you win, the more packs you get.
And yep.
So it doesn't matter what somebody else does.
Yeah, don't worry about being in the top 8 finishers or anything like that. It's all based on your own results, so...
But, what makes a pre-release awesome for me is that it is the event that the most people come and participate in. And it's one thing that's always weird to me is, let's say noon on Saturday. We probably average about 70 or 80 players for a noon Saturday pre-release. But every year, or every 3 months, there are 5 to 15 new players.
Yeah.
But then we're always at that exact same number. So it's sort of interesting how that phenomenon happens where you're like, well, where were the 15 people from last time that these people are replacing?
Yep, exactly.
So, what do you like about pre-releases?
I mean, pre-releases are so great because you're just experiencing the cards for the first time. So, you see a card in the spoiler and you're not sure, is this good enough? Can I make this work? And, the pre-release is the perfect time to just say, all right, I know I might, this card might be better, but I want to play this card and I want to see if it's worth it. It's where you get those stories of like, you know, I had this and this happen and it was amazing. Like, and I was okay with doing that because there wasn't a lot on the line and everyone else is in the same boat. So you get a lot of those new interactions. Everyone's experiencing the cards for the first time. So they're kind of learning, like, is this worth it? Was that good? Was that bad? You help each other experience it as well as, you know, you with your own deck.
How about you, Hawk?
I just really like the excitement that everyone brings to the pre-release events. And then just playing and usually getting blown out by the new card that I did not see coming.
You're running the first one. You're running the Midnight pre-release. So you're going to be the guy, the guinea pig, who some new interaction that we didn't anticipate will be in the set and you'll have to figure it out.
Well, it's a good thing they print out those forms for that.
Oh, don't make it sound that simple. Sound scared.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess the last thing, we're going to move on. We're going to wrap up for quite a while with what we call quick hits, and it's going to be mostly Kyle and Hawk, just going back with what their favorite cards from this set. So, but the thing about pre-releases at this point is, like, for your local area, I mean, this is your gathering moment. You know, it used to maybe be PTQs or various things, but I mean, it's really the pre-release.
Yeah, exactly. You're gonna see a lot of faces that you recognize. If you've played Magic before, or you're gonna have a chance to meet new people. I mean, you're gonna play four rounds, so that's at least four new people that you're gonna meet, and every one of them is gonna be just as eager to meet you and share the experience with you.
I'm playing Two-Headed Giant at 6 p.m. on Saturday. So ooh. If you want a chance to dream crush me, there you go.
Yep, get in there and get your beat on with Rich.
My pools are usually so bad. But that's the other story. It's like everyone thinks their pool is bad every time.
Except yep, exactly.
Two teams who just opened like four bombs.
Yeah, nobody knows what's good or bad because it changes every set. So
yeah, but I'm not a very good player, so I just need bombs.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's a good thing there's a little familiarity with the core set.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Quick hits. Who wants to go first? Hawk, you're going first.
You get to
tell us one of your favorite cards from this thing.
Okay, well, this one's actually going to be a reprint. It's Crucible Worlds coming back.
Never heard of it. What was that from originally?
I believe it was Fifth Dawn.
Yep, Fifth Dawn.
From Mirrodin. And then it's, I think, 3 mana. Then you can play lands from your grave.
That's it.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
Was that good?
It is, especially when you're using your Strip Mines with it.
I'll believe you if you know. Like, yeah, this is when we were referring to like calling this like a master set for $3.99 instead of $9.99. Like, this is exactly the card we're talking about for that, right? Like, yeah, it's just a crazy good reprint that probably is a long time coming.
Yep, exactly. This was a very popular card with, like Hawk said, Strip Mine and Wasteland. Commander's players are all about this because you're always throwing cards in your graveyard. Your lands are always getting blown up. Excited to see if this can have any legs in Standard. I know we already had Runemap Excavator, and he never really quite got there, but these are the kind of cards that you build a deck around, and then just crazy things happen when you get this card at the center of your deck.
There's a couple more examples, but I mean, when you think about it, like, you come in and you're buying booster packs at the counter at Paradox. I mean, for $4... Look at all the stuff that you have a chance to pull out of this set. And, like, foil Elder Dragon Legends are going to be really cool.
Those are going to be outstanding.
You know, and you get a shot at foil Crucibles. This is a lot of good cards in this set. Kyle.
So I'll hit up on another reprint as well. This one, not so much. Well, it is a good card, and I like it. But I love, like, it was the perfect time to reprint it. It's Banefire, which is X mana and then a red. It's a sorcery, deals X damage to any target, and if X is 5 or more, the spell can't be countered and the damage can't be prevented. So not only is this a good card for ramp deck finishers, because usually you kind of run out of gas and you're trying to get those last points of damage through, and the last thing you want to see when you cast your lethal burn spell is your opponent having a counter spell or some way to prevent the damage. So this one is just going to get around that. But I love this card is like one of the signature moves for Sarkhan when he first came out. I mean, it depicts Sarkhan becoming like a half dragon and just spewing fire all over the place. It's so iconic that we're finally returning and getting Sarkhan back into the Standard and into a set, and then we get Banefire along with it.
And the core sets usually like an X spell, you know, a red X spell. So, yep. I mean, it's an excellent reprint.
Yeah.
Hawk?
My next one is Resplendent Angel.
Don't like it. No, I don't even know what it is. Go ahead.
All right. Well, it's actually a 3-mana angel. It's a 3/3 with flying.
You're on your own on this one. I didn't pick this one.
Oh, okay. Well, it also, if you gain 5 life at the end of your turn, you get a 5/5 angel token.
Sounds right. Yeah, yeah.
And then you can pay, I think, 5 mana and give it 2/2 and lifelink until end of turn. So if it sounds connects, right, it'll gain you 5 life, which will give you that angel all on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, does it, and it's an angel, does it fly?
Yes.
So you get a 3/3 flyer for 3.
Yes.
It's already pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't really care that it has abilities.
And it's an angel. Like, I think that's what's most appealing is that angels have always been big, expensive flying creatures. And now we get a 3-mana flying creature that fits in with all your other angel cards that you want to play. I mean, we did just get Lyra Dawnbringer in the last set, which works really well with angels, gives them all +1/+1 in lifelink. And there's a couple other angels floating out there right now that it'd be great to slot into here.
I miss this card. I just feel like this card seems crazy good to me. Like,
yes.
What is it? White. I assume it's white 1.
White 1.
Yeah, okay.
So
yeah, white 2 would be. I mean, think back to Sarah Ascended, right? I mean, sure, that was white for your 3/3, but.
Oh, yeah. Avenger, Sarah Avenger.
Sarah Avenger, sorry.
Yep, that you could only play after the third turn of the game.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
yeah, I mean, this is just a very well costed card. You don't even have to be playing other angels or really other lifelink cards, you know, or gain life cards. Like, the fact that you're going to be beating in the air for 3 starting on turn 3 and then the potential to start making 4/4 flying angels later on, like, that's a
What if you had any amount of ramp and then turn 4 just activated its ability, you know,
yep.
Boom. So,
for sure.
Wow. Yeah, okay, that card's good. Kyle, what do you got?
So I actually wanted to talk about one card that's exclusive to the Planeswalker decks because this one kind of has potential. Maybe not in Standard, but even in, like, Commander. It's called Gravewalker. So it's a 5/5 flyer. It costs 4 black-black. And it has the ability of pay 5 black-black to return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. So just a 7 mana, you get to, you know, rise from the grave whatever creature in your graveyard that you want. The fact that this is just a recurrable effect that can happen every turn really intrigued me and definitely has the potential to be kind of broken. I mean, once you get to 7 mana and you're bringing back a creature every turn, it probably doesn't matter like what creatures you're bringing back at that point. You just keep getting value over and over again.
When you had to, I mean, this is an interesting thing. Once they started doing unique cards in the Planeswalker decks,
yep.
I mean, they're going to screw up. Like, even if they, like, mostly the Planeswalkers they've made, you know, haven't really had any impact because they're very, you know, they tend to be expensive and
yep, exactly.
Real average abilities. But if they ever do miss it, you know, if they ever screw up and make a good card, it'll be really interesting because it's only going to be available in that deck.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, that card is pretty intriguing.
Yes.
So, good catch. Hawk.
Okay, my next one is called Psy, Master Thopterist. He's a 3-mana creature, 2 and a blue. Whenever you cast he's a legendary. Whenever you cast an artifact spell, create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying, and you can pay 1 and a blue, sacrifice 2 artifacts, draw a card. He's a 1/4.
Sure.
Yeah, no, I just really like him because you can play him with, like, cheap artifacts,
yep.
Get more artifacts, and then you can cash in those artifacts and draw
yep.
some more cards.
Seems very solid.
Yeah, I think this is a great build-around card. Like, if you make this the centerpiece of your deck, it's going to be very threatening. And I think 1/1 flying Thopter tokens are always a little underrated, but you'd be amazed at how often they can just get the job done.
We've never seen those be relevant in decks in the past at all.
Never.
So I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So. No, that card's good. My brain is sort of – it's another one I wasn't aware of, and it's just like, yeah, that card's good.
Yep.
Kyle?
So there's another card – that was kind of a throwback to one of my all-time favorite cards ever. So this one is called Volley Veteran. It's 3 and a red. You get a 4/2 Goblin Warrior. And if you know anything about 4-2s, there's one 4-2 that reigns supreme out there. His name is Flame Tongue Kavu, and this guy does a pretty good impression of him. It says, when Volley Veteran enters the battlefield, it deals damage to target creature and opponent controls equal to the number of goblins you control. So you got to jump through a little bit of hoop, but it's a 4-power goblin creature that also acts as removal when you play him in your goblin deck. Like, this card is kind of scary. Usually our goblins are, you know, 1 or 2 power. So if you can bump this guy up at all or give him haste, we just had Goblin War Chief get printed. There's a Goblin Lord in Core Set 2019. Siege Gang Commander's hiding out there. There's a lot of ways to make goblins, and this is a great, you know, threat plus removal spell that I don't think you want to sleep on if you're looking at a goblin deck.
No, we were talking about this guy in the shop the other day, and I like him a lot. I think, you know, nothing's ever going to be Onslaught Goblins again, but boy, the pieces are all over the place for,
yeah, exactly,
the goblin deck here. So,
yep.
Hawk.
Okay, my next one is called Shield Mare. It's 1 and 2 white for a 2/3 horse. Shield Mare cannot be blocked by red creatures, and when Shield Mare enters the battlefield or becomes the target with spell or ability and opponent controls, you get to gain 3 life.
What's its power toughness?
2 power, 3 toughness.
I mean, I'll say this. That's a spectacular limited creature.
Yeah, for sure. Great and limited.
Really good
against a red deck that's like trying to, you know, get your life total really low, really fast, and remove creatures with direct damage.
Right. No, it sideboards right into the against the deck, yeah. I was just talking, or we, yeah, were just talking about. So, no, it's that's really good.
So, yeah, it's interesting. They did a cycle of like minor color hosers, and they're all horses, which could potentially be relevant for 3 months because we do have Crested Sunmare in the format, which makes horses indestructible and makes more horses if you gain life, which Shieldmare does. So some potential there, you know, the underrepresented tribe of horses could be in the spotlight for a little bit.
Like, it's solid too because, yeah, it's a hoser, but it's not on the level of older hosers. Like,
right.
It's not, you know, oh, you played that, there's literally nothing I can do.
Yeah,
know?
Like, oh, you played a core Firewalker.
Right,
I can't do anything.
Yep, I'm done. Yeah, yeah. So, Kyle, you're next.
So, my next card it brought back a lot of memories of one of the first decks that I played when I got back into Magic most recently. This card's called Sarkhan's Unsealing. So it's 3 and a red for a red enchantment, which history shows those are always really great, those red enchantments. this one says, whenever you cast a creature spell with power 4, 5, or 6, Sarkhan's Unsealing deals 4 damage to any target. Whenever you cast a creature spell with power 7 or greater, Sarkhan's Unsealing deals 4 damage to each opponent and each creature and planeswalker they control.
Jesus.
Yeah, so... Definitely. So the deck that I built back in the day was based around a card called Where Ancients Tread, which was a 5-mana red enchantment that if you had a creature with power 5 or greater enter the battlefield, you got to deal 5 damage to any target. So great, you know, conveniently 4 shots of that at 5 damage was usually enough to kill my opponent. Sarkhan's Unsealing does the same sort of thing, just a little bit less at 4 damage apiece. But the fact that you can play 4-power creatures... and then also have that coup de grace when you do get your big dude at 7 power and you're just going to wipe your opponent's board and deal 4 damage to them. I'm really intrigued. If you can stabilize behind this card, it's got a lot of potential.
Like your Naya deck.
Yep, exactly. Like, exactly. So if you're looking for a sweet deck to brew for your first deck once Core 2019 comes out, let me know. I'll help you out with this one.
I can see that. And it basically, I mean, it's 7 mana. It's the, I mean, red often has the wildfire type effect.
Right.
Just,
yep,
blowing up lands, but you know what I mean. So,
yeah.
That's not the card I want to say. There's a, but yeah. But yes. All right, Hawk.
All right. My next card is Alpine Moon. It's a 1 red enchantment. As it enters the battlefield, you choose a non-basic land card name. Lands your opponent's control with the chosen name lose all land types and abilities, and they gain tap, add 1 mana of any color.
Urza's Tower.
Yep, does work against those pesky Urza Tron lands, as they're fondly called.
I mean, how does this, Hawk, how does this fit in slightly differently, better or worse than, you know, the Blood Moon fix to the same similar problems, you know, or cards like that?
Well, one interesting thing is that they do lose all their land types. Yep. So if there's something that cares about that, it will not get the ability from that.
Yeah, like the Urza's land specifically, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
or like even just something that says like, how many swamps do you have on the battlefield?
Sure. Oh yeah. Okay. Does this go in sideboards over the Blood Moon?
I think it depends how fast you really want it,
or what the format is, maybe, or.
Since it was only one mana versus the three
sure.
of Blood Moon.
Sure.
Yeah, I think the thing that's also always scary about Blood Moon is you have to build your deck with it in mind as well, whereas this is very much like, I'm only affecting yours, and it's going to do what I want it to do. I don't have to, like, jump through hoops to make sure I don't get affected by it as well. So I think that's definitely intriguing. And, yeah, the fact that it comes out on potentially turn one, so you don't have to worry about, you know, counter spells or something like that.
So long term, is this one of the cards that has the most effect on like the game in general out of this set? You know, in that it's like sideboardable in, you know, all those formats and.
Yeah, I think it's got the most potential. I don't know if it will, but
it's got some stiff competition from the also recent Blood Sun.
Sure. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, they are putting out a lot of cards trying to do the same thing.
I think they're just trying to figure it out. Like they kind of went. You know, the most extreme mode with Blood Moon, and that was, you know, printed back in the dark, like a very old card. They weren't sure what they were doing back then. So I think that they could be trying to find some replacements, yep. and maybe we eventually see a card like Blood Moon get phased out of the game, you know.
That's what I'm kind of wondering, you know. Mm-hmm. But okay, we have 4 minutes left, and we'll be at an hour. That was Hawk. Kyle.
I have to pick my favorite one.
Make it really fast.
Really fast. Okay, I'm going to talk about a really sweet limited card that you should build all of your decks around. This one is Poison Tip Archer. It's 2BG. You get a 2/3 elf archer. It has reach. It has death touch. And it says whenever a creature dies, each opponent loses one life.
Yeah, no, that guy's great.
So this is an amazing body in limited. Like yeah. a 2/3 with reach and death touch. It's always trading for something. And then you're just going to get to the point where the board stalls out, and it doesn't matter if you swing and lose all your creatures or not. Like, you're still going to kill your opponent. It just yeah. – there's so much value in here. Take this card early and often. Try not to pass it. Like, it's going to be great.
You know, don't underestimate this card for a second.
Yeah.
It is that good. So, Hawk.
Okay. My last one is Goblin Trashmaster. He's a 2 and 2 red. He's a 3/3. Goblin Warrior, other goblins get 1/1, and then you can sacrifice a goblin and destroy an artifact.
That, which is good. For what, you know, I mean, red doesn't get to, well, yeah, wait, red does that a lot. But that's a good card.
Well, it's another Lord after we yep. just got one in Dominaria.
Yep. So how many cards are there? Like, right now, you can easily put, what, 16 to 20 goblins in a deck without thinking about it?
Yeah.
So. I'm not saying you would put 4 copies of every one, but I mean, you can do that, right? Prospector.
Siege Gang.
Siege Gang, Warlord, this guy, the 4/2.
Yep.
We probably need
there's
some more
a, there's a new one. It's 2 mana, it's a 1/1, and it makes a 1/1 token when it comes in.
Sure.
So it's a new version of War Marshal.
Yep. So. All right, so listen up, everybody. That was what we can do for a set review for M19 because we're not going to be here for 3 hours, which we could, you know, but you won't listen. And we'll all fall asleep because we're old. All right, I'm old. You're young.
Yeah, I'm kind of old.
Hawk is young. He's a baby. He's about to turn 21 years old.
Holy moly. So
party time. Anyway, pre-release July 7th and 8th. Booster box is still available on pre-order. Then the set comes out on the 13th, the next Friday. So the next 2 weeks are just packed with opportunities to play, opportunities to get new cards. And, I mean, this is just a really, really solid set. I don't know if it's better than Magic Origins, but that's not fair. Like, I don't know what can, you know, like,
yeah, that's a tough comparison to make. But they definitely learned a lot from Origins, and they're trying to recapture that. And it makes me very excited for what this will be.
If you're new to listening to or following Paradox, you can find us on Facebook at Paradox Comics and Cards. You can find us on our website, www.paradoxcnc.com. Twitter, we're ParadoxCNC. Instagram, we're ParadoxCNC. Woot, woot. And you know what, guys? You each get one more card.
Ooh.
Yep.
All right. Mirror image. It's a new version of the clone. So we've got two and a blue for a 0/0, but you may have it enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature you control. The exciting thing about this is it's an uncommon. We've never really seen a enters the battlefield as a creature effect at uncommon before. But obviously the drawback being it can only hit yours. So you got to make sure you've got some good dudes out there for you to copy.
Hawk.
All right. This is going to be the box.
The last
purple
card. This is the end. You are responsible for taking us out with a bang.
Well, this card is a bang. It's a Nexus of Fate. It's a 7-mana instant, 5/2 blue. You get to take an extra turn, and then if Nexus of Fate would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, you reveal it and shuffle it into its owner's library instead.
So I was really dumb because I was like, what difference does it make if it's an instant?
It makes a lot of difference.
No, especially in multiplayer formats.
Well, because like Time Warp was turn 5, play Time Warp was draw a card. You know, like,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
All that card was like, this is spend your mana when it's not your turn and take 2 turns in a row.
With
like,
all of your mana available.
With all your mana available. Yeah. And even that, like all the control decks, like I don't have to cast it because I got all my counterspell mana if I needed to do that. Now I don't Nexus. You know, like,
yep.
Yeah, I mean, how is this card not really good? Like, am I missing something?
No, it seems very good. It's pretty. It's definitely got some potential.
What does it go into? I mean, the reshuffle. Like, you might only get to play it once. Like, whatever. Like, Commander. Like, where does this card go?
I don't know. Like, control decks. Like, we've just saw one where the win condition is like just cycle Teferi back into your deck every turn. Like, this does the same thing. I'm just gonna cast this ad nauseum, and like, sure, I've played every land in my deck, so I have to spend 7 to take an extra turn every turn. Like, I'm gonna get you eventually.
Yeah, and I get 2 opportunities. Like, I could play Prodigal Sorcerer and win the game.
Exactly.
So, yeah, Hawk, I assume you brought, like, you're a fan of this card, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, just for one thing in the set, you can do it with Chromium and threaten to play either of them.
That's true.
All right, everybody, I'd love to keep doing cards, but we're going to call it, and we hope to see everybody here. We know it's summer, but you love Magic the Gathering. Don't you guys love Magic the Gathering?
I sure do.
I love Magic the Gathering. So come Saturday night, 6 p.m. Take me on. All right, thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks cast. Oh, look at the clocks cast. Until next time, yeah.